And welcome to Star Wars Sleepover, a laid-back exploration of the captivating and sometimes ridiculous galaxy far, far away. I'm Europa Tokani, and as always, I'm here with my co-host.
Hi, I'm Laura Rowan, and today we'll be discussing Ahsoka by E.K. Johnston. I'm pretty psyched. Ahsoka is one of our favorites, and E.K. Johnston is amazing. Let's do this.
Okay, it's time now for Cantina Corner, where each episode, Loya and I are each choosing a Star Wars-themed drink this month, because it is still January. It's January 31st as we're recording, so like last time, Loya made herself a mocktail, and I made myself a cocktail. So this week, I was searching for Ahsoka-themed drinks, and I found a cocktail called I Am No Jedi, which I thought was perfect. However, it definitely was a fail in terms of following the recipe, because I found this one on drinkbaiju.com. I had no idea what baiju was and had to research it, and apparently it's a Chinese liquor. And I found lots of articles and discussion about how no one should ever drink it, essentially, unless it's for nostalgic or cultural reasons. So I definitely feel like this website was created to try and promote baiju, and I knew immediately that there was no way I was going to be able to procure it. So my plan was to make it with soju, which I actually love and would be happy to drink, but things have been kind of crazy around here recently. Siri, who was our Galactic Glamour guest, my sister, just moved in with her husband temporarily. So short story is they inherited a house. It needs a lot of renovations, so they're living with us for the time being, which is definitely a positive thing, but they just moved in. We've been trying to help them get settled, and so I never purchased soju. So instead, I pretty much made a gin sour.
Nice.
So it's gin, triple sec, lime juice, simple syrup, and an egg white. And I did offer it to everyone else. I'm not sure that they enjoyed it, so definitely curious to see what it tastes like. But before I try it, I just wanted to point out that this cocktail, or at least the baiju version, was created for Home Bar Awards October 2018 Star Wars themed cocktail competition. And the person who submitted the cocktail says that they were particularly inspired by, and this is what drinkbaiju.com says, the animated series Sith Lord Ahsoka Tano.
What?
And wanted to honor her with something classy and classic, yet strong and unpredictable. So I agree with that. I think that fits Ahsoka, and that's why I thought this cocktail would be a good one to try, but definitely
Sith Lord, huh?
A Sith Lord, but I guess the writers at Drink Baiju don't know that. So I am going to go ahead and try it. It's good. I like it. It's definitely strong. I feel like I maybe put too much gin in it, and I don't know that I'm gonna finish this, because I was explaining to Loya that as one of my birthday gifts yesterday, now that Siri and her husband have moved in, we did a wine course yesterday that involved 6 different wines, and I'm not feeling great today, and I just had a glass of one of those wines because we're trying to use them up, so I may not be finishing this. It was an interesting experiment. So we'll move on. Loya, what are you drinking?
All right. So I decided to choose a Yoda soda. And I was going to do the recipe as posted on food.com. It involves limes, sugar, sparkling water, and a scoop of lemon sherbet. I'll get into that in a second. However, I've been drinking way too many club soda and limes, and so we have no sparkling water anymore. So I found an alternative, which is on all recipes, and it is ginger ale and sherbet. And as part of this, because I was like, oh my gosh, I've said sherbet wrong, sherbet wrong my entire life. This is true, but everyone else says it wrong too, for the most part. And I stumbled across like a very interesting explanation of how to say sherbet or sherbet, and found a song from like 1939 called Shoot the Sherbet to Me Herbert, but they say sherbet in the song, and it is very catchy. And part of the explanation why people consistently mispronounce that is it is apparently a trait of the English language to make words sound like each other, so sherbet and herbert, which explains part of my difficulty saying shoot the sherbet herbert. So I say sherbet. I'm just gonna continue doing that because sherbet sounds ridiculous to me. Don't like it, not doing it. So yeah, Yoda soda, let's do this. Can you ever go wrong throwing ice cream or sherbet into something? This also reminds me of a time when I was at a friend's bridal shower and they had like a punch for kids that had sherbet in it. And then they also had champagne. And I thought it was a brilliant idea to like combine the two. So I poured myself a cup of punch and then like started pouring the champagne over the punch. And like it ended up getting into the punch. And my friend's mom doesn't drink. And she was just like looking at me and I felt really bad. But it wasn't very much champagne in my defense. So it's really good. So good. It's also, I'm using Q ginger beer. Delicious. Love it. So
that sounds really good, and I wish I had that instead of my drink right now. Like, I actually would love a mocktail at this moment, so I'm jealous of your Yoda soda. I'm probably just going to drink my water for the remainder of this episode, but cheers.
Cheers. All right, and now it's time for the Mouse Droid segment. So, Rebels, I guess?
Yeah, so I thought we would just kind of catch up on where we are. So, you had started as of our last recording a couple of weeks ago, and yes. I am on season 4.
Wow.
And I actually texted you the other day because I had just started season 4 and had watched the first episode. And it was so good. Like, we already have established I like Rebels, but I feel like the fourth season is, like, on another level. And we had already planned to do an episode about Rebels this season on some aspect of it. And after watching the first few episodes, like, 100%, that is what we're going to have to discuss. So, all right. Where are you in Rebels?
Good question. I think I am almost done with season 2, and then I have not yet started season 3.
Yeah, so we're planning our Rebels episode for March, so that'll be coming in a couple of months, but we'll be recording in about a month and a half or so, so we'll definitely be finished up by that time, and it will probably focus on a smaller aspect of Rebels. Like, we're not going to do a whole retrospective of the series, but I think we can definitely find something that's really compelling that we want to talk about just for that episode. And then I think there's a good chance that we'll go back at some point and talk about other aspects too.
Awesome. Yeah. And then in addition to Rebels, you're also ingesting. I need to stop using that word. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I thought I would mention that I also have started reading Light of the Jedi by Charles Soule, which is the first of the High Republic books. And I was kind of on the fence about that whole, I don't know what to call it, initiative within Star Wars, because it's weird because I always say, like, I love Force stuff, and I do, but I don't love the Jedi. Like, I don't know. I have a complicated relationship with the Jedi.
Their overly simplistic black and white attitude.
Yes. So when they announced this, I was like, oh, great. Like, a series of books and things set in a time when the Jedi were just even more uncomplicated and were just like doing great things and everything was great. I'm like, I don't really know if I'm interested in that. Mm-hmm. But I started seeing reviews from other podcasters and other people in the Star Wars fandom that said that they were really impressed with this book and they really enjoyed it and they thought that it really was like a fresh start and it seemed like it was going to be a place for people to come in and just like see a totally different part of the Star Wars universe. So I was like, okay, you've convinced me. So I ended up picking it up and I'm probably about 100 pages in at this point. I haven't been able to read as much of it as I would have wanted due to all the stuff I was talking about earlier, yeah. But hopefully I'll be able to get into it more over the next couple of weeks and I can report back. But I am enjoying it so far and I do enjoy Charles Soule. He was the author of the Rise of Kylo Ren series of comics, so I already am a fan of his. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, let's get into Ahsoka. What did you think of it overall?
So I liked it. We have talked about how we're fans of E.K. Johnston. I don't neither one of us had read anything by her before we read Queen's Shadow for this podcast, but I have liked everything that I've read by her so far. And in addition to these two Star Wars books, I also read A Thousand Nights. And yeah, I like her style. I just like how she approaches things, and this book was not an exception.
Agreed. I really thoroughly enjoyed Queen's Shadow, and I really like this one, and I put Exit Pursued by a Bear on my library hold list. And I do want to read A Thousand Nights as well. So, yeah, I really like this. Like, I've been going through, I guess, I don't know how long of a phase it's been, but it feels like it's been a while since I've read something like prior to this one that was like thoroughly enjoyable. It's been a struggle to get through like my last couple books, just so slow going. And so it was just like such a relief to like pick up Ahsoka.
So this was a really quick read for me as well, which isn't a negative thing or like a knock on it at all. I read it over, I think, 2 days, maybe.
Whoa.
But granted, it was also when I was on a holiday break because I work in higher ed and I had 2 full weeks off, so I didn't have anything to do really other than like read and do things that I chose to do. So I actually have very nice memories of reading it about a month ago, like sitting next to my Christmas tree with a cup of tea, like under a blanket. And I feel like that totally fit kind of the vibe of the book, which we could talk about later. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like it was just a fun, I don't want to say fun. I don't know if it was a fun read. I guess I wouldn't say
that. It was enjoyable.
It was enjoyable, yeah. And it was quick. And I felt like I was kind of just like spending time with Ahsoka.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And I'm also like, at this point, it's been hard for me to focus, which I think is part of the reason, like, has been a struggle to, like, get through the books I've been reading. So the fact that, yeah, it was something that, like, was challenging in some ways, but also, like, not challenging in others. This was just, like, hit all the right buttons. I was like, I can finish a book, like, in a timely manner. I can enjoy it. So this really, like, triggered a bunch of... I'm more into reading now than I was before. Like, it's easier to read. And I'm also excited that I'm putting all these, like, Star Wars books on hold at the library. Yeah, so I have some background information. This book came out in 2016, I do believe. Yes. And E.K. Johnston did some interviews at the time. And she had mentioned that, like, she had not watched the Clone Wars or had put off watching the Clone Wars because she end quote. I knew that I would see the Jedi and the clones, and I would love them, and then I would be very sad. Then the early reviews of Star Wars Rebels started to come in. I decided to go for it anyways. And then I met Ahsoka Tano. I love her because she's just so unapologetically wonderful. She's talented and smart and a quick learner, and she knows it. She's brash and a bit reckless, but she listens to advice, even if she doesn't take it. And she always levels up. And I thought that was an excellent description of Ahsoka, which is why we love her.
I agree. And I also feel like that's very similar to our experience with Clone Wars.
Yes.
And I think you have a note in here, and I seconded it. Like, sometimes we both feel like E.K. Johnston is just inside of our heads. For example, like with Queen Shadow, she just made everything happen that we didn't know we wanted in terms of Padme and the Handmaidens, and like made us have this totally different perspective on them. And this is not related to what I originally started saying, but I think we approached the Clone Wars also having avoided them, myself in particular. And it wasn't because I knew I was going to be sad if I watched it, but I just didn't know that there was going to be anything in the series that was really going to catch my attention or that I really was going to be invested in. And I feel like what there was that I became invested in was Ahsoka. And so I relate to E.K. Johnston saying that, like, things kind of changed for her when she got to know Ahsoka.
Yeah. I also appreciate the fact that, like, she was going to be sad about the clones because, you know, I have a soft spot for the clones. Which is only increasing given Rebels. Like, seeing Rex, I was like, I was scared Rex was dead or was going to die. I suppose this is a spoiler if you haven't seen Rebels. He doesn't die. Yet. I hope he doesn't. Anyways, so I thought he was going to die and I was like, not okay with that. But yes. And then also E.K. Johnston had mentioned that she was used to fan fiction and that it was more difficult writing inside the lines, which I thought was very, like, interesting. And it would be more difficult, right? Like, you have a fairly narrow scope. And then finally, she had she was asked, what is it about Ahsoka that you've grown to admire? And she responded, I love how she is so driven and competent. And I love that, like, me and competence.
Anyone who knows Loya knows that that's, like, her number
my
one.
My number,
like,
one.
Yeah, like, that is the utmost quality.
You could be many things.
Yeah.
But competent is the most important. Don't care what you do, you just have to be really good at it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, speaking of having to stay inside the lines, I follow E.K. Johnston on Twitter, and somebody had posted a drawing of Ahsoka and Varys.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like Varys whispering something to Ahsoka, and there was like a little dialogue bubble that said, wait, where are your ears? And E.K. Johnston retweeted it and was like, this is an actual question that I asked. And she's like, I had a conversation with Dave Filoni when I was about to write Ahsoka, and I asked him if I could have Rex, and he said no. And then I asked him where Ahsoka's ears are, and Dave Filoni was just like, make up something that seems plausible.
Oh my god, is it bad? I never realized Ahsoka doesn't have ears.
I have never really thought about it much.
Oh my god, that's crazy. I mean, I guess this is like where Cad Bane's nose, like, or the whole, like... So I did learn... that Duros have, since they don't have a nose, they have, like, scent things, I think, under their eyes. So, there you go. In case you wondered where the Duros nose, Duros sense of smell, I'm just confirming this.
If you read Light of the Jedi, you'll find out some more about Duros anatomy.
That is amazing. I'm totally going to do that now. Yeah, so olfactory organs beneath their eyes were responsible for their sense of smell. To give a quick summary, Ahsoka features Ahsoka after leaving the Jedi Order and after the execution of Order 66, hiding from the Empire and kind of trying to, like, make a safe space for herself. So the majority of the novel is set on the planet Rada, which is a farming planet, and she befriends the farmer, a group of farmers there. But it's also interspersed with flashbacks and different points of view and some backstory about, like, where she kind of started and, like, how she ended up on Rada and so on. So, like, overall, how did you think the structure of the book worked? Like, did you like the flashbacks?
I mean, I wouldn't say I disliked them. I don't think they detracted from the story at all. I think it was interesting to kind of see where other characters that had a relationship with Ahsoka were and what they were thinking. And I liked them. I thought that especially the Obi-Wan flashback, which I know you wanted to talk about specifically, was really well written. So I think it makes sense because a lot of this book, I feel, is kind of taking you to where Ahsoka is at this point, both physically and kind of mentally and psychologically. And I think it was interesting to see that for others, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the flashbacks. The different points of view, I felt myself, like, wanting more or, like, wanting some consistency. Like, the one for Obi-Wan is just the one chapter, which I did think was interesting. I feel like E.K. Johnson should write into a book about Obi-Wan. And she had written, or, like, in one of the interviews, she had mentioned that she wrote this entirely for her own hearts. And then it's a nod to Kenobi by John Jackson Miller, which was a huge influence on her as a Star Wars writer. Yeah, that one, it was intriguing to me, and I wanted more. All right. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about was we've now, since this book came out in 2016, there has been a new, like, there was a final season of Clone Wars. There was The Mandalorian, which featured a live-action Ahsoka, and obviously Rebels. Overall, how do you feel, like, is there consistency with these different Ahsokas through time, or did you find anything like, oh, that one seemed a little off?
I think there's definitely consistency between Clone Wars and Rebels, which is not surprising because they're both Dave Filoni and totally makes sense.
Yeah, he's on top of it.
Yeah, I think E.K. Johnston's Ahsoka also is congruous with the animated Ahsoka. Like, I totally saw her in this book, and I know it's a little different because we are kind of inside of her head and we're with her when she's completely alone, and that's not normally who Ahsoka is. Like, she's she wouldn't normally be by herself, and that's not what she would choose for herself necessarily. So I think that's just an interesting perspective, but I think even when you are kind of there alone with Ahsoka's thoughts, they're consistent with who we know her to be.
Yeah.
If there's anything that I find inconsistent, and I've talked about this a little bit, is the Ahsoka in The Mandalorian.
And I didn't find that too much of a discrepancy, just because, like, this one actually, Ahsoka the novel filled that, like, made that seem more plausible to me, because initially I was like, what, Ahsoka's not going to take Grogu? Like, why would she not do that? But, like, watching her interact with Hidala in the novel, I'm like, oh, okay, this is definitely, like, provides extra background information, which I say all the time.
So now that I'm saying that, I guess the Ahsoka in The Mandalorian is kind of similar to the novel Ahsoka, in that she is alone again, and she's off on her own just doing what she thinks she needs to do.
Yeah.
So maybe I should rethink that, I guess, and be a little bit more charitable towards Mandalorian Ahsoka, but I just feel like seeing her in The Mandalorian, she didn't have, like, that spark and that spunk that we know Ahsoka to have. And she just seemed much more serious, and it was honestly, like, a little depressing, because you almost have to wonder, like, what's happened in between the last time we see her and The Mandalorian and just what's going on and why she's so subdued. And I don't know if that was a deliberate choice to indicate what she's been through in that time, or if it was just the way that Rosario Dawson was portraying her, but it just felt off to me.
Yes, I could see that. Like, Rebels, Ahsoka seems much more, like, not, I think, the spunk, right? Like, granted, as we've mentioned, we're not done with Rebels, and it's entirely possible, like, she's going to change over the course of the series, but, like, when she was revealed to be Fulcrum, I was like, oh, and, like, kind of the way she is making decisions and her, like, role, she definitely seems... That seems like it's a transition point between Clone Wars and The Mandalorian, along with this book a little bit. This book is a little bit, I feel like she's got more of that spunk, but yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously she is older and more mature, but I don't know. I missed that about her, seeing her in The Mandalorian, but
yeah.
She's always had that spirit, regardless of anything else that was going on.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, like, the more we see her in Rebels, if that kind of comes back, or if that's, like, just, she is kind of more staid. Is that how you say that word?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe that's, like, my own thing, because I wouldn't say that I'm similar to Ahsoka at all. And, like, personality-wise, not at all. If I had to choose someone that we talked about, like, doing this E.K. Johnson episode, I would say I'm much more similar to Padme than I would be to Ahsoka. But that's kind of what I admire in Ahsoka, is that spunk and spirit and...
Confidence.
Like, I would not have that. So, to have... And I don't want to say, like, again, I don't know what's behind this, but to kind of see that missing in The Mandalorian just is upsetting.
And then to kind of continue talking about, like, how this Ahsoka kind of fits in, E.K. Johnson gives acknowledgement to Pablo Hidalgo, Dave Filoni, and the rest of Lucasfilm Story Group. So they obviously were, like, working together. Like, they were helping her during the writing, kind of providing some feedback. And then what, something I didn't realize when I was, like, going through and being like, oh, how does she compare, is that that final season of Clone Wars came out after this book. In the case of the final season, it was actually after. And so there are some discrepancies in, like, the flashbacks shown in Ahsoka and what ended up happening in Clone Wars. And there's an article on Fansided talking about this difference, and they made the case that, like, it's partially due to trauma, and so there's no doubt Ahsoka is traumatized by Order 66. She can bury it, but she can't forget it. And then it's possible that her memory of confronting Maul has been tainted by the memory of him leaving her to die.
So I'm glad that you found this article and that you decided to talk about it on the podcast, because I thought that that was a great point, and I think that that is evident in the book.
Yeah,
that Ahsoka is dealing with trauma, and it is totally possible that her memories could be tainted by it. I don't think that was the authorial intent, because Clone Wars, the last season, hadn't come out, so, like, that wasn't what she was trying to do to make it fit, but that is definitely something that I noticed and appreciated about this book, that it acknowledged that, yeah, like, this was a traumatic thing that she went through. And I had a note in here about specifically her guilt about surviving Order 66 and her complicated feelings about having left the Jedi Order and what happened to the people that she knew that were part of the Jedi Order. So I thought I would just read this quick excerpt, because I think this is, like, a really salient point. So on page 63, I actually thought it was 66 for a second, and I was like, that's just weird. But no, it's page 63. Ahsoka is thinking, "The Jedi were gone. Ahsoka thought it mercilessly, over and over again, still too afraid to say the words out loud, until she could take the final step. The Jedi were dead. All of them. The warriors, the scholars, the diplomats, the generals, the old and the young, the students and the teachers, they were dead and there was nothing Ahsoka could do. Why had it been her? She'd had that thought 100 times since Order 66. Why had she survived? She wasn't the most powerful, she wasn't even a Jedi Knight, and yet she was still alive when so many others had died. She asked the question so often because she knew the answer. She just hated facing it, as painful as it was. She'd survived because she had left. She had walked away.
Yeah. E.K. Johnston, you are amazing. That's such a good, like, those two paragraphs. So powerful. And, like, I feel like it's, yeah. Yeah. That's a lot going on for her. In addition to, like, the discrepancies noted in Fansided, there was also a, like, side-by-side comparison by Sky Walking Through Neverland, which is a blog written by a 14-year-old who, like, did a very comprehensive job about, like, identifying the different things, like, between the novel and the final season of Clone Wars. And one of them is the lightsabers. I assumed Ahsoka would retain her original green lightsabers in this last story arc in the Clone Wars as she had in the previous six seasons. They are changed to blue in the final season because Dave Filoni... I always have to pause because I do want to say David said on Twitter that he wanted to show more of the connection between Master and Apprentice with Ahsoka and Anakin. So he said Anakin shifted the angle of Ahsoka's crystals so that they were blue. And then presumably like in, yes, because this would be before Rebels. So in the novel, she takes the Kyber crystals from one of the Inquisitors and like they were red and they become white. And now she has white lightsabers, which is also what is the color of her lightsabers in Rebels and The Mandalorian.
I love that whole concept of healing.
Yes. Kyber
crystals. And especially for Ahsoka, I feel like that's so apt. Like, yes. I'm glad that she has them again in The Mandalorian because I don't know. Like, I love that. And the whole concept of creating a red lightsaber is that you bleed a kyber crystal. Mm-hmm. And then once you heal them, they're purified and they become white. And I have a white kyber crystal for my Galaxy's Edge lightsaber. It's what I wanted originally. Nice. But when you do the experience at Galaxy's Edge, that's not an option. So you have mm-hmm. to buy it separately. But I ended up creating mine with a purple kyber crystal, and then one of my friends went later on and got me the white one, and like I love having it.
Yeah, I like I like that whole like transition, like the idea of healing the kyber crystals, and white is so cool. Like the cover, she looks amazing, and I did like that in The Mandalorian. And let's see what else author of Skywalking Through Neverland is Jonathan Maroquin. He also noticed some differences in the capture scene of Maul, the execution of Order 66, Ahsoka leaving a message, and then overall the final thoughts. So that's just a great summation if you want to check that out and like to see the differences between the two. I do appreciate the other article noting that those, like, it's not so much retconning as it might just be like trauma coloring memory.
Honestly, I didn't notice most of those things, if I'm going to be 100% honest, so it didn't affect my reading, but, you know, other people are on it.
All right, and then the other thing I wanted to talk about, I don't know why I said the other thing, there's many things I want to talk about. Another thing I want to talk about is Ahsoka's relationships with the other characters, and just kind of, like, the differences between the two worlds that she's on. So one of the families on, I forget the planet, where the Fardis live. So she starts the book on Tabasca, and she meets a family called the Fardis, who are smugglers. And so she assumes another name, Ashla, and then the Empire comes to Tabasca, and she ends up leaving. And then she comes back after she left Rada. And both times, the smuggling family took her in, which I was just, like, very impressed by, just because... Yeah, I feel like you're taking one risk. That's one thing. But after she leaves and takes the ship and then comes back and then to provide safe refuge again, like, I was very impressed with the Fardis.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting too about them and about just the book overall was this concept of finding family.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Ahsoka did have a family with the Jedi, and she doesn't have that anymore, but she does have that with the Fardis, and then she has that as well with some of the other characters that she meets, and it's kind of different families over the course of the book, but I think one of the themes is definitely, you know, Ahsoka starting off alone.
Mm-hmm.
And being afraid of connecting again because of what has happened with the Jedi, but being able to find that again.
Yeah. Yeah. And then with the Fardis in particular, I really like the character of Hidala, who's one of the young daughters of the extended family. And she has, like, Ahsoka noticed some force sensitivity with her. And there's this one passage, like, after she comes back the second time on page 231, where Ahsoka's kind of warning the head of the family to be careful. And I just thought that was, like, so well written and so poignant and so sad. Like, you know, we see through the films, like, you do see Force-sensitive children, most notably in The Last Jedi. But, like, the fact that these, like, as Rebel fills in, people are hunting them down. And as this book fills in, like, you know, the Force-sensitive children are still out there. They're just being hunted. And I found this, like, so devastating because, like, and this also ties in with the fact, like, Ahsoka isn't ready to mentor anyone or, like, depending on how the spinoff Mandalorian show goes, might not ever be ready because she pretty much gives the head of the family a warning. And then he says, he puts the pieces together and then he says in this kind of like coded language, "Do you think she'll grow up to be a mechanic?" he said. And Ahsoka knew he understood everything she hadn't said because Ahsoka's posing as a mechanic. And she replies, "There isn't anyone to teach her," Ahsoka said, choosing her words carefully. "She won't exactly grow out of it, but eventually she'll grow into other things." And I was just, the idea of that is just like, Ahsoka's not going to be that teacher. She thinks all the other Jedi are dead. It's just a very sad, tragic moment in this book.
Well, thinking of this and then thinking of The Mandalorian too, like, this is another instance where Ahsoka is traumatized by what's happened and what she's seen happen to Anakin in particular. And that's in addition to now it just being dangerous to be force sensitive because the Empire is hunting down force sensitive children. Like, to her now, being force sensitive is this really threatening thing that is going to threaten your own life in one way or another. So I think you're right when you say that this book actually lends a lot of context to Ahsoka's appearance in The Mandalorian, because all she knows of now in terms of the Jedi Order is just, like, the terrible consequences that it had for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. I also thought it was interesting, like, comparing her to... So Kanan is another person who, like, is very uncomfortable being a teacher in Rebels. But, like, I don't know if it's just, like, because Ezra's older or Kanan's different or, like, Kanan's kind of operating in a different way. But he feels more, like... To me, he's obviously more comfortable taking on this role than Ahsoka, which is really fascinating because, like, granted, we don't know all of Kanan's backstory, but I thought that was, like, an interesting juxtaposition. It's just, like, how people have reacted to Order 66 in different ways and, like, the different influences that they have has led Ahsoka to kind of assuming this fulcrum, not mentoring anyone approach, and Kanan is kind of, like, fell in with Ezra and is kind of working his way through teaching him, which is fascinating. And another contrast I want to put in is between the Fardis and the farmers. So on Rada, as I mentioned, Ahsoka falls in with specifically two sisters, so Kaden and Miara. Yeah, I'm not sure how to say her name. And then they have
Miara.
They have an overall crew comprised of some other individuals, including a set of twins, I forget the foreman, and then there's also another Torgruda, who is a bartender slash shop owner on Rada. And I just thought it was very interesting. Like, the Fardis are smugglers, and they take Ahsoka in twice without really asking any questions. The farmers struggle, so they put themselves in danger multiple times because they fundamentally, like, do not trust Ahsoka, essentially. Like, when it comes down to it, there's a scene where, like, she's doing one thing and they're totally doing another, and it ends up with, like, very tragic consequences. And I thought that was, like, she, like, directly contrasts the two and, like, acknowledges the fact, like, they're farmers. They didn't sign up for this risk. They don't really, like, it's a little bit different than the Fardis, where they kind of are assuming risk as smugglers and they have a better grasp of it than people who just, like, came to Rada to farm and make a living. This transition to, like, being occupied by the Empire is a lot more fraught for them. So, of the farmers, the main character, I would say Kaden, who is the sister to Miara, and there's an initial description of her when Ahsoka first arrives on Rada. And E.K. Johnson describes her as, "It was a girl about Ahsoka's age, but with more lines around her eyes. Ahsoka had spent her life on starships or in the Jedi Temple for the most part. This girl looked like she worked outside all the time and had weathered skin to show for it." Whew. It doesn't help that I, like, drink that NA beer. All right. "Her eyes were sharp but not vicious. She was lighter than Master Windu but darker than Rex, and she had more hair than both of them combined," which I thought was hilarious. Like,
not difficult.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought that was E.K. Johnson, just, this is a great description. Like, you, I feel like you immediately get a sense of, like, what Kaden's like, with a sense of humor thrown in. And we had alluded to her briefly in our episode about L337, because did we determine that she was the first queer character in the Star Wars realm, like, officially? Or
I don't know if she was the first, but okay, we had researched.
She's a notable.
Yeah, we had researched queer characters in official Star Wars media in general, and she was definitely, like, one of the few that we could definitively identify.
Yes. Yep. And I think in part because she is interested in Ahsoka, she trusts her despite a lot of, like, pushback from her fellow farmers. Except for, like, one notable exception, which we'll talk about. But you have a note here that you wanted to discuss, like, her interest in Ahsoka and the way it's kind of, yes, like, confessed.
Yes. So this is jumping way ahead towards the end of the book. But I wanted to discuss how Kaden makes it explicit that she's, mm-hmm, interested in Ahsoka and Ahsoka's response. So yeah, I'll read the excerpt and then I'm curious to hear your reaction to it.
Yeah.
So this is kind of when they're, like, reunited after the bulk of the action has happened. And she's seen Ahsoka kind of at her full Jedi power, which Ahsoka had been holding back prior. So they see each other. "Kaden," Ahsoka shouted and ran to help her move faster. "Ahsoka," Kaden ran toward her, but stopped short of throwing her good arm around Ahsoka's shoulder. She knew that lightsabers were not to be trifled with. She could almost feel the power pouring out of Ahsoka anyway. It was amazing. "I could kiss you." Ahsoka stopped in her tracks. The look she shot Kaden was mildly confused. "Not now, I mean," Kaden said. She wanted to laugh for the first time in weeks, but thought that might just be the hysteria setting in. "My timing is terrible, and you have all these Jedi hang-ups. I just wanted you to know in case we die." "Oh," said Ahsoka. "Well, thanks." She paused. "And we are not going to die," which is such an Ahsoka thing to say.
Yeah, exactly.
"If you say so," Kaden agreed. Ahsoka deactivated the lightsaber in her left hand and attached it to her belt. She kept hold of the right one. With one free arm, she supported Kaden, and together they walked away from the cells.
Yeah.
So, like, what did you make of that exchange?
So I was trying to think, like, initially I was just like, does Ahsoka, like, is Ahsoka interested in anyone like that? And, like, I remembered there was that whole, oh God, that whole plot line.
Oh
on
God, yes.
Clone Wars. Ugh.
Oh my
that was
God,
the
I
worst.
Hated that.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched all those episodes and I was just like cringing. So
she
much
was
cringing.
Way too good for him.
Agreed. And not to mention, like, he was very clearly interested in someone else, and she, like, eventually stopped being interested in that character whose name I'm totally blanking on, and in part because Anakin had a talk with her, which I thought was kind of funny. But I guess if anyone's going to talk about having feelings and being a Jedi, it would be Anakin. And I was like, oh, right, that happens. But, like, yeah, it's not clear. Like, and I think it might be deliberately unclear, or maybe people who wrote episodes were just not that interested in Ahsoka having feelings for people, romantic feelings for people, I should specify. But it seems like it's ambiguous enough that it's not clear whether or not, like, if things had been different, she may have reciprocated, or, you know, what her orientation is, if she has an orientation. So yeah, I thought that was interesting. I liked Kaden's way of handling it. I thought that that was like a much better way than I could have ever like handled a similar situation. I would have been like, oh God, maybe being in a life death situation makes it easier. But the idea of confessing one's crush to someone who doesn't necessarily share your interests is just like, still gets me very stressed out. Happily married.
Yeah, I wanted to discuss it because it was unclear to me, at least, whether Ahsoka just wasn't interested at all, and then whether she wasn't interested in Kaden, or she wasn't interested in anyone, or if she just was so taken aback and surprised by it that she kind of was just like, what? And may have had other feelings that we just don't know about because they weren't expressed in that one exchange.
Yeah. And I feel like that is like a deliberate part on E.K. Johnson's part. Like, she opens that door a little bit and then they're just like leaves it open, which maybe like another novel will come along and it'll explain more.
But I think it is clear that Ahsoka at least wasn't aware that Kaden had these feelings for her.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I completely agree. Which is, I mean, I feel like there's a lot going on in Ahsoka's head when, like, you know, we'll talk more about this later. She may have not been the most perceptive in regards to that, but it did seem like it was fairly obvious to everyone who knew Kaden. Like, yeah. There were multiple references to, like, people teasing her about having her crush.
Yeah, and even saying to her, like,
yeah,
like, straight up, like, you only trust her, or you're only listening to her because you like her.
Exactly, her sister, yeah. Which we'll also get to. And yeah, I mean, like, I thought Kaden was really compelling as a character. I did struggle a little bit with the farmers and how they reacted to Ahsoka's plans and the Empire, like, occupying their lands.
Well, because, like E.K. Johnson said, she's so competent. And in that period, that first part of the book where it's just Ahsoka on her own when she first arrives on the planet, she has all of these plans. Like, okay, I know that in order to be safe here and to protect other people, I need to do this, this, and this. She, like, found those caves and was getting supplies ready. And, like, I get it that she's an outsider, and I get that they're not used to having the Empire occupy their planet, like you said. But if there was someone on my planet who I met who was like, hey guys, like, I've been through this before. I know what the Empire is like. I know what sort of danger you're in, and I know how to help you. I would definitely listen to them.
Yeah, more so than the hothead who just wants to blow stuff up. Like, I don't know. That was the hard part for me. So, like, one of the characters who's on Kaden and Miara's crew is Hoban, who is kind of like the driving force. And the fact that the crew leader went along with it too, I'm just like, why? What made them think this was a good idea?
And also, like, to your point about listening to people that are emotional and hot-headed, like, Ahsoka was so calm about everything. Like, I had a note about a particular exchange where, like, she was like literally just like, hey guys, like, you're gonna wanna do this and this and this, like, start just stockpiling what you can, but like wasn't saying it in like a panicked fashion. Like, she was just like, I just know that this is what you should do. Like, again, impressive.
Yeah, exactly. The competence, where it's just like, yeah, you're in the middle of, like, what would it normally be, like, for me and the farmers, presumably, a very stressful situation. She's just like, yep, got it covered. And then they decide to go behind her back and plan a, like, operation at the same time she's doing an operation. And then it just goes south from there. And so Hoban, the hothead, ends up getting killed. Ahsoka ends up revealing that she's a Jedi. And then Kaden's reaction, I was just like, this is unwarranted. So I had a hard time with that. She, like, essentially accuses Ahsoka of not knowing anything about family, not helping to save them. And then Kaden storms out with a line, "What do you even know about family? You never had one, and you probably never had friends either. Just clones who had to do everything you said because you were their superior officer." And then she leaves, and then she's immediately caught. And I'm just like, this entire exchange was, like, very difficult. Because I understand being high-tempered and, like, things going badly, but I feel like that was just, like, way harsh, Ty.
That was extremely harsh. I agree.
It seemed a little out of character, too. Like, the way that, and we'll talk about Miara, too, the way that they're, like, initially, like, "We really like you, of course you're family, we're adopting you," and then they turn on her so quickly, I just felt like was, again, a counterpoint to the Fardies, who, like, she put them in possibly even more danger than she did the farmers, and they're still just like, "Hey, thanks for being a mechanic." So I might be too harsh on the farmers.
Well, I do feel like there's an interesting dynamic, especially with Kaden and Miara, because, but they're orphans, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So Kaden and Miara are orphans. So in a way, they're in a similar situation to Ahsoka, where they've lost their family and are on their own and trying to survive. And maybe they're projecting on her a little bit, and maybe they have their own trauma that's coming to bear on all of this.
Yeah, that's true. That might be the situation, because I did feel like she did way more than, like, she has no ties to this community, and here she is trying to help them survive, like, and they go behind her back and, like, screw things up.
Yeah, I think maybe they have abandonment issues to some extent, and finding out she's a Jedi, and a main point of contention is that she didn't use the full extent of her abilities to protect them. Like, I feel like they're experiencing some trauma based around that.
Yeah, this felt very similar, and actually that's kind of funny, because this came first to Ahsoka's relationship with the two sisters at the end of Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. Kind of that same, like, we appreciate you, but we're still, like,
out for ourselves above all, exactly. And that's the way we have to be, kind of thing.
Yeah. Which I also found moderately hard to deal with, especially with older sister, because, like, she made terrible decisions. Like,
yeah.
And if Ahsoka hadn't been around to, like, save her. And then there's, like, the both sides ism, which drives me crazy, where it's just like, well, you did this and I did this, and these two things are somehow equal. I'm just like, no. Omitting the fact you're a Jedi and then going behind someone's back when they obviously have superior tactical knowledge, those are not the same things. So Kaden is interrogated. And Kay Johnson had mentioned that, like, the two Star Wars scenes that scared me the most as a kid were when Leia stares down the interrogation droid in A New Hope, and Hans, they never even asked me any questions, seen in Empire. So, you know, and the interrogation was, like, very...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing about Hans, they never even asked me any questions line, is I feel like that didn't hit me until I was an adult. And then I was just like, wow, that is truly chilling. Like, they just straight up tortured him just because. Like, at the same time, like, you don't see that when there are interrogation torture scenes in Star Wars, like, you just see the threatening, like, equipment and technology. You don't see it actually happen. So to read the details of it, it was so much more brutal than, like, anything that I had experienced in Star Wars in that regard. And so much more visceral. And I think this goes for the deaths in this book in general.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, because I mean, like, I'm just thinking of, like, you know, when Poe is interrogated, you see Poe after the fact, and, like, he looks roughed up, but, like, you don't actually see the interrogation. And, like, he's able to resist it. Like, you know, it's also weird that, like, when I first, they'd never even asked me any questions scene, like, the way that Harrison Ford delivers that line, it always kind of makes me laugh, and then it's messed up. Like, I'm just like, I'm like, it's kind of like the incredulous disbelief in his statement elicits a laugh in me, but no, that is terrifying. Yeah, I thought, like, they just, the farmers do not fare well in this at all. Like, Caden and Miara end up being, like, one of the, I think, the Torgruta and the crew leader also survive, and some other, like, characters that aren't named, but, like, a lot of the members of the crew don't make it, and, like, are killed in very traumatizing ways. Someone sliced in half.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And then even that is just written in such a way that makes it so much more real than, you know, when you're just, like, watching Clone Wars and you see people get, like, chopped with lightsabers. It's just like, okay, like, I feel like if you can be kind of detached with lightsabers, like, psychologically, because you don't bleed. Like, yes, your limb gets chopped off, but it's instantly cauterized, so there's no gore. So it's almost, like, surgical, but I don't know if I have this page marked, but the description of watching the person be cut in half, like, fully embraced the horror of watching that happen and, like, made the clinical nature of it what was horrifying about it.
Yeah, I'm trying to find that page because, like, I was also struck by that, and, like, the way that, yes, exactly. So Ahsoka comes back to Rada and encounters Miara, and then Miara's like, they were all dead, Ahsoka. All of them. Neera, the others. Colvin was cut in half. It was the worst thing I've ever seen, and there wasn't even a lot of blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have these, like, these farmers who have, like, well, these two in particular, who have already gone through a lot, and they're just going through more. But yeah, I feel like it's, for Miara, especially, like, when I was prepping for this, I, like, noticed the change. So I was like, wait a minute. So, like, in one of the earlier interactions between Miara and Ahsoka, Miara is very perceptive, and she just goes, now, I don't expect you to tell me who died, but clearly someone did. Caden said you were adopted, which means you lost family twice. So now you get us. And then, like, a little less than 200 pages later, Caden and Miara are having a conversation, and Caden's sticking up for Ahsoka, and Miara's just like, why would she come back? There's nothing here. Like, it went from being, we're family, to we're nothing. In a way that was like, I mean, Ahsoka didn't, I mean, she left, but it was definitely a strategic leaving. She, like, rescued Caden. She, you know, there were things that she did that she didn't have to do, and I just feel like Miara was selling her, like, way short. But maybe going back to the fact that, like, they've already been abandoned, or they've already been left behind.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
So I'm going to read a little bit of page 174, and we should mention, this is the, at least I have the paperback. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm at the hardcover.
And okay. The pages match up. So the pages do match up, so that's good.
Yeah.
So this is on page 174 into 175. And this is, like, a direct callback to Han in Empire Strikes Back, first of all. The first interrogator didn't ask her any questions. He pressed a machine to Caden's chest, and when it was activated, all Caden could do was scream from the pain. She would have said anything, given up anyone, to make the pain stop, but the woman didn't ask, and she never let up long enough for Caden to talk. When she finally removed the apparatus, Caden fell sideways onto the floor, her throat too raw from screaming to say anything at all. The second set of interrogators asked, of all things, about her health. They wanted to know if she had heart problems, and if she was fully human, or if she had some genetic quirk. Which, like, I don't know why, but that's just...
It's so impersonal, right? Like, you're sitting there asking questions about someone's health while you're about to torture them, like... And then lots of Nazi overtones there.
Caden's voice was slow to return, so she mostly nodded or shook her head in reply, and when they were satisfied with her answers, they strapped her to the chair, palms up. Caden realized that this exposed all the veins in her arms. One of the interrogators went into the corridor from the medical tray and wasted no opportunity for drama in showing Caden the needles and vials they were about to use on her. After all the injections, Caden felt too cold and too hot at the same time, and she had trouble holding her head upright.
Yeah. The part that, like, I was really struck by is the few pages later on 177 is basically, like, the interrogators get around to threatening her, and she flinches. And she flinches so severely, she wrenched her arms sideways in their straps. Her shoulder joints scraped agonizingly. But before she could fully register the pain, the chair toppled over. Her arm had moved just enough that it was crushed underneath the metal chair, and it was that pain, real and concrete, that finally broke the fog in her brain. She breaks her arm because, like, she freaks out. And then it's also, like, later on when we talk about the villains, one of the villains, like, asks how that happened, and they're like, yeah, no, that was not intentional. And it was just, like, the kind of callous way that that was described was just, like, extremely horrifying.
Yeah, and, like, that in... like, together with the fact that she's drugged, and, like, what are they injecting her with, like?
Yeah.
All right, well, we can move on from that. I am impressed with the way that E.K. Johnston wrote about that, and I think it's just, like, masterful how she really kind of brought home how messed up it really is, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, going back to it, like, the way we've talked about torture being in the films and everything, like, you so frequently see people just, like, standing up to the torture, like, pose resistant until Kylo, like, you know, invades his mind. And then, like, Han Solo, they didn't ask him any questions. They just tortured him. Like, you see people, like, not... like, they're injured, but they're still resilient. And Caden just, like most people, I'm sure I would go through the exact same thing. Like, I would be so scared. And then just, like, to fall over, yeah. Like, it's just, it's felt more like something that would, I could relate to. And it is a nice counterpoint to just, like, the stoic, like, you'll never get the information out of me. Like, if they had asked her, like, she would have told them. And I think that E.K. Johnson mentions that earlier, or at some point, where she's just like, yeah, what do you want to know? Or that she was thinking about that. I should probably verify that. All right, so let's see here. They say that she doesn't want to tell them. She tried to answer him, but only croaked. The throat was clear, talk or pain. Caden honestly wasn't sure yet which one she was going to choose. So that, I guess I was mistaken in regards to that. Although maybe it's later. She said she would leave Rada in a heartbeat if she could. If it would save her or Miara from ever feeling that machine on her chest again, she would do it. Guilt was a long pain, but it was survivable. She wasn't sure how long she'd hold up if she was tortured again. So in addition to the Fardies and the farmers, there's also some rebellion appearances. So we have Bail Organa, who is amazing, and I found it really fascinating, like, kind of the way he was navigating the, like, tricky political waters post the rise of the Empire, but more so about his understanding of Anakin and Padme's relationship, and then with Leia And then he was kind of like testing Ahsoka to see how much she knew, which I thought was really interesting. So he, on page 345, they're having a conversation and Bail shrugged, but there was some tightness around his eyes. Running a rebellion couldn't be easy. She's already a lot like her mother, he said. Somehow that seemed like a test. Ahsoka didn't know the answer, so she let it pass. They were going to keep secrets and they were going to trust each other anyway. Yeah. Like, she does not know that Leia is Anakin's daughter, which I thought was, like, interesting. I keep using the word interesting, because I'm just, I don't know.
I don't know what other word to use, but I thought it was interesting as well, because in Clone Wars, I think she does say and do some things that would seem to suggest that she knows that Anakin and Padme are together.
She definitely knows that.
I was trying to think, like, why she would respond that way, and maybe it's just that she doesn't know, I don't know if she didn't know about the pregnancy, or maybe she did know about the pregnancy, but she just doesn't know what happened to the children, so, like, maybe she has no reason to think that Bail would have one of the twins, so she just doesn't know where Leia came from, essentially, and is not thinking about it in connection to Anakin and Padme.
Yeah, I would be very curious to know whether or not she knew about the pregnancy, because at that point, I feel like she had already left the Order, right?
Yes.
And so she may not have known that Padme was pregnant. But at the same time, like, again, Anakin projecting the shit out in the Force, like... And, like, the fact that Leia's Force-sensitive, you know, maybe I'm... There's not a whole ton of interaction between Ahsoka and Leia, so maybe that's it. And, like, it's very much in the context of this is Bail's daughter. Like, there's nothing else going on there.
Yeah. Like, for all she knows, I guess, because she's kind of been off on her own, like, she could just assume that that's his biological child.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it was, that was very, I was very captivated by that passage and, like, Bail kind of, like, probing to see the pairing between the two characters is captivating. And then there's R2-D2.
Yeah, it was really sad for me in the first part of the book where she kept making reference to R2 and saying, like, I wish you were here. And talking about how helpful he would be, because obviously he would. And then I just could not have been more thrilled when they actually were reunited. Like, I was so excited.
Yeah. And when I was doing the research for this, like, E.K. Johnson had mentioned, like, you don't realize how much dialogue is spoken to droids until a character doesn't have a droid to talk to. Writing those scenes was so fun and a bit less stressful for me because I knew exactly who knew what and what was going on. And yeah, I thought she handled that really well. Just like the allusions to, like, you know, it's like having a pet, right? You fall into these, like, patterns of speech. And then when the pet's gone, you're kind of at a loss.
That's how I feel when our dog goes to daycare. Like, she went to daycare on Friday, and it just feels strange not to have her there. And, like, I just find myself being like, oh, I need to do this. And, like, yeah, you just get used to having that companion, and it's really strange when they're not there.
Yeah. Like, I remember with my family's dog, like, when we had to put her down, like, it was those few visits. Like, coming back, I would be like, puppy! And there's no puppy there. Kind of like that with, it was like, reading that, I knew exactly what Ahsoka meant, was talking about. Except in the case of R2-D2, he was not dead.
Thank
you. Yeah.
R2-D2 will never die.
He can't. So yeah, I enjoyed, like, there wasn't a whole ton of focus on these Rebel characters, but I enjoyed the context that they provided in their short scenes, and I liked the way Ahsoka dealt with Bail. I feel like that was also very classic Ahsoka, just being like, I don't trust these people, I'm gonna find out for myself. And then the last group of people that I kind of want to talk about is the Empire and the villains. And I had written a note here that's like, the death count's pretty high. We've talked about like the farmers being killed mm-hmm. and the graphic nature of their deaths. And it was a surprise reading that, I think, because, you know, as you mentioned, like, it can kind of feel detached when you're watching it, because like people go down all the time, like Clone yeah. Wars, clones die all the time, and it can kind of get, you become numb to it, and that was not, this book did a good job of humanizing the otherwise surgical deaths. And I mean, like, I was like, what the, like, every farmer who died, I was kind of like, no, like, not them too, like, yeah.
Yeah, kind I totally same, agree.
Yeah, my same attitude towards Rogue One, where it's just like, that person died too? Like, yeah, you're fighting against the Empire. You're not likely to win, especially when you're not a soldier. And between, like, the fact we kind of watched Rogue One and then this, it felt very real.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we've been trying to get at, is yeah. that this book makes all of that very real and very human in a way that not a lot of Star Wars media does.
Yeah. That being said, the villains did not share that same treatment. I would say the villains were maybe the weak point of the book.
I agree. I was going to say, if I had to call out one thing that I thought was not super strong about this book, it would be the villains. And I know you have a note about, is it, I don't know how this is pronounced, we'll say Jeanette Pilar, how he is an evil bureaucrat. And
yeah,
I had a lot of notes about how he really seemed one-dimensional, and he was like just comically a bureaucrat.
Like, yes,
to an extreme that made it difficult to take him seriously.
Yeah. And I feel like, again, the fact that we watched, like, we're talking, not watching it, we're talking about this, like, after watching Rogue One, this kind of suffers the same problem, where it's just, like, you have two villains, and it's not, you know, it's hard to, like, maybe it's just me, or maybe it's just, like, these villains, it's hard to, like, take them seriously, it's hard to, like, juggle priorities. Like, Sixth Brother is obviously way more evil and powerful than Jeanette Pilar, but Jeanette Pilar right. just kind of like pieces out. So
yeah, I mean, I think definitely the Inquisitors are much more threatening.
Yes.
And yep. also fit better into kind of the larger narrative.
Yep, especially with Rebels. Like, this was very illuminating for me. So Sixth Brother is the main Inquisitor, and he's introduced by, he's on Thebesta and watching Hadala Fardi, or trying to. He apparently, like, his introduction, that was, like, weirdly comical to me. So he's sitting there watching these kids, and he's just like, the main problem was that after a certain point, despite his training as an Inquisitor and skills of observation, all children look the same to the Sixth Brother. And I'm just like, this has got to be a pretty big problem. If you're an Inquisitor and you're trying to hunt down four sensitive children and all kids look alike, maybe you should consider a new career.
Maybe he suffers from face blindness.
I know. Oh, God. Inside my joke. Hollow love. It's in everything. Yeah. And then he, like, pretty much leaps at a chance to go find an actual Jedi, and so he leaves and never notices Hadala, thankfully. And it seems like he is the same species as the Grand Inquisitor. He's consistently described as being gray, and then yeah. Ahsoka describes him as, like, taller than she was, even with the height she'd added in the past few years, and very broadly built.
So, like, that's what I was thinking when I was reading yeah. this. I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. But, like, I still don't know if that is actually the case.
Yeah. I'm like, it doesn't seem like there's a whole ton of, like, gray species out there. But it's weird that, Ahsoka has traveled, you know, everywhere, and she doesn't recognize his species. Like, that seems a little, it was unusual.
I also don't think that the Sixth brother appears anywhere else. So it's not like we're going to find out.
Yeah, right?
He's just like a generic Inquisitor.
Unless E.K. Johnston is listening to this and she can let us know.
Yes. If E.K. Johnston is listening to this, please let us know which species you had in mind.
Yes.
That would be amazing.
So he's introduced, he sets this trap for Ahsoka, and then there's the inevitable confrontation, which Ahsoka is, like, we'll talk about this shortly, but to kind of skip ahead, it turns out the Sixth Brother dies in a lightsaber accident.
And all like workplace incident.
Yeah. Like, so essentially, Ahsoka must have nicked the power connection that channeled the crystals inside his hilt, and now it was overloading. If he didn't deactivate it soon, it was going to explode, and then it, like, immediately explodes, and he dies. But my first thought was reading this passage was, like, what? He died, which is apparently my reaction to everything. And then also, I couldn't help thinking of Kylo and just, like, how lucky he was that he didn't, like, die in a lightsaber accident while creating his, you know, close to overloading lightsaber. So, yeah. That could have been his fate.
It could have been, but I guess he was just stronger than the Sixth Brother.
Presumably he can identify children, too. All right. And then, at the very end, they allude to the Grand Inquisitor, which is, like, a perfect segue into, like, us watching Rebels. But they might, there's a line where, like, he works for Lord Vader, and I was so angry at Anakin. I was like, you jerk. It's not enough that you killed younglings. Now you're sending Inquisitors to, like, round them up, and, like, oh man. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it was just very, what's the word? I want to say cleansing, but that's not the word. I feel like there's a very specific word that I want, but I don't know what it is. But yeah, that I feel like it was nice to have the opportunity to just yell at Darth Vader when I was playing Vader Immortal.
Yes, I could totally see that. I mean, like, as Darth Vader, Anakin does terrible, terrible things, but this was just, like, another terrible thing that I wasn't already blaming on him, and then I just got all angry.
Yeah.
I'm just like, this is why Anakin's the worst.
Well, so. I mean, we've already talked about Vader Immortal, and, like, I guess spoilers if you plan to play that game, because I wouldn't want to spoil it, because it's really cool. But on our theme from last week about leaving people alone, and the Chris Crocker leave Britney alone video in this case, it was, leave Padme alone.
So let's not end it there. Another thing I want to talk about. Wow, I introduce every topic? The other thing I want to talk about.
Not usually.
let's talk about meditation. and Ahsoka's train of thoughts. So this was, I really enjoyed the contemplative nature of, and, like, the focus on meditation and, like, the way that Ahsoka was structuring her thoughts. I have found a new meditation app, and this was, like, perfect. It's like, yes, yes, this is great. Yes.
That was something that stood out to me about this book as well, that it just felt very mindful and, like you said, contemplative. And it was nice to be in that space, even though, you know, Ahsoka is thinking about her trauma and what's happened, but there were also very just, like, quiet moments where she was going about her routine, and you were just kind of there along with her. And that's something that I really loved about this book.
Yeah. Yes. Like, she was in the room, and you guys, like, we were meditating together, and I was like, I would love to do that with you, Ahsoka. And I loved the way that she kind of, like, her perspective changed through the book. I'm always appreciative of authors who are able to, like, show a character's growth. They're not just doing the same thing over and over. And then I like the theme of balance and just, like, the poise that, like, Ahsoka's channeling, and how, like, she recognizes initially when she gets to Rada that she is unbalanced and kind of seeks to kind of, she recognizes it, but then doesn't let that stop her as well. So yeah, big fan of meditation. Definitely want to like throw a plug in for the app I use. The Healthy Minds program. It's free. It's fantastic.
I have also started using that based on your recommendation, Loya, and I've been trying to use it every day and at least do 1 5-minute meditation per day. And I've also been doing kind of the course setup. So like usually I'll do like a 5 or 6 minute lesson and then like a 5-minute meditation.
Yes.
And it's really been helpful for just getting me in the habit of doing it and getting me used to meditating and helping me train myself to be mindful in those few minutes. So I would recommend it as well.
I also really like the fact that they do like periodic check-ins where it's just like, they like show you prompts. You're like, sometimes, all the time, never, et cetera. And I've definitely noticed like improvements in some of my areas and then not improvements in other areas, but I haven't gotten to that part of the course yet. So
if you are interested in mindfulness and meditation, I also would recommend The Jedi Mind, Secrets from the Force for Balance and Peace, which is a book by Amy Ratcliffe, who's awesome. If you are on Star Wars social media, definitely follow her because she's great. But this book was published a few months ago and I have it, and it introduces a lot of the basic concepts of mindfulness and meditation with like a Star Wars twist, and it also has beautiful illustrations. So if you are someone like us who like wants to get into meditation but feels kind of overwhelmed and just wants to start off with quick little exercises, that's a great thing to start off with as well.
Nice. It all comes back to Star Wars.
Okay, well, that's it for today's show. And our intro and outro music is by Lobo Loco. And our segment break music is by Paddington Bear. As always, you can find us on our website at StarWarsSleepover.com. And I have to say, after our last episode on Rogue One, if you're not going to the website, you're missing out on some really prime Photoshop jobs from Loya. So you should definitely check it out. And we're also on Twitter at SW Sleepover and on Instagram at Star Wars Sleepover. And if you don't already follow us there, please do, because you'll get all of our updates about new episodes and our drinks. You can also find me at my own handle on Twitter at Stelle Lontane. It's StelleLontane. And if you have been listening and you like us, please consider subscribing, rating wherever you listen to podcasts, and especially please consider leaving us a nice review, because those are just the best. They definitely keep us going and we really, really appreciate them, and they do help others find us. And also, if you like us, just tell your friends, tell other people that are interested in Star Wars and are looking to get into some new podcasts. So we will be back in 2 weeks talking about Lego Star Wars, which is going to be pretty new for us, but we're excited.
We're also exciting.
We are exciting. I hope you agree. But we are excited because I think that will be a really fun, light episode. So thanks for listening.
And may the Force be with you. I'm